This is the place where Black is the main character, where we dive into something new like the latest season of Them, The Scare, and the award-winning American Fiction. Or add to the experience by buying or renting the biopic of a legend, Bob Marley, One Love. And add on channels like Paramount Plus and Stars to bask in nostalgia with Beverly Hills Cop and BMF. Explore Prime Video's culture-rated collection and enjoy old-school greats and new-school hits. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
I can't believe it.
Let's open up that rave line! Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe USD has hired Lincoln Riley. Oh, yeah!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Raina Troy Radio, episode 505, coming to you on Wednesday, September 20th. We're going to look forward to USC and Arizona State locking horns in Tempe at Mountain America Stadium. What the hell is a Mountain America Stadium?
It sounds like a bank that they would make up to be in Breaking Bad or something like that.
It's horrible. It's a credit union that doesn't even have a location in Arizona. What the hell is going on? Mountain America Stadium. As always, you can join us here live on YouTube. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, YouTube, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts and email. We are there. Our email address is ramtroyfanside.com. I'm your host, Mike Castillo, joined along with my co-host here in the Raina Troy Studio in Los Angeles on her birthday, Alicia Derratola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. Welcome. How did it feel to be a year older?
Does it say anything that I'm not actually sure what age I am right now?
I've reached that age too, where I'm like, am I 33? No, I'm 34.
I woke up this morning and thought to myself, I'm 34?
Here's the depressing part about it. I don't mean to be depressing for you, but here's the depressing part. Today is your 34th birthday, right?
I think so.
Yeah. But that means you've already completed 34 years and you're starting your 35th year.
Oh, well, that's
the depressing way to look at it, right? That's depressing.
No, it's not depressing. The reason we celebrate birthdays is because we have survived another year. I was thinking about this morning and how kind of morbid that concept is, but it's the truth. We have survived another year.
Well, and
I am very happy to have survived another year and to, you know, keep living my life. I'm chill with my age, honestly. I went through the age crisis at 29, so it's all good.
Well, the greatest song ever written says, you know, the sun is the same in a relative way, but you're older, shorter of breath, one day closer to death.
Well, okay, that's also, yeah.
Staying
on the morbid train.
I know.
But that's cool.
Yeah, because every year's getting shorter and never seem to find the time. But I will shut up about that. We are back here for USC and Arizona State preview. Should be a fun one Saturday night, the Trojans and the Sun Devils. Big welcome to everybody joining us here on YouTube. A lot of happy birthdays that you're getting.
Thank you, everybody. A lot of happy birthday
love that you're getting here on YouTube. Big thank you for all of those things. We are pumped up to talk about USC and Arizona State. Why? Because Alicia, I love the state of Arizona. Multiple reasons. Number one, I think objectively a top five most beautiful state in the country.
It is an underratedly beautiful state.
Ridiculously beautiful. Yeah. You got Utah, Colorado, Washington, Alaska, California, Arizona. Okay, maybe not top five. Top 10, surely. It's up there. I mean, Arizona's beautiful.
There's a lot of beautiful states. Arizona is one of them.
Yes, absolutely. It also has my favorite meal in the world right there in Tempe. If you're going to Tempe, by the way, if here's a little inside baseball. Do you want to go to Arizona this week and sound like a true Zony? Then you have to pronounce the name of the city correctly. It's Tempe. Tempe, not Tempe. I learned this when I moved there. I was like, why are these people saying Tempe? What is Tempe? Never heard of Tempe in my life. That is technically how you're supposed to say it.
That is funny because we were just having a conversation about how Tempe is a city of transplants, city built by transplants.
Mm-hmm.
Because Tempe sounds like when people mispronounce Oregon, and it's like, what are you doing?
Well, they say
it's
Oregon.
Oregon. Yeah. It's like, it's Oregon. Like, it's like, why are you overthinking this? Like
Nevada.
Tempe is exactly like that. Like, what are you doing? But you know what?
But if it's that's right. Them, it's somehow
that's
right.
If that's how they want to do it in Tempe, then
that's how Tempe.
By all means.
Yeah, it is Tempe. But anyways, my favorite meal is in Tempe. And Alicia, you agree with this? Because you agree with most of my food takes, even though people do not want to acknowledge that.
No, I agree with some of your food takes. I vehemently disagree with many of your food takes. But one of your food takes is your opinion of that particular meal, which you should tell the people about.
Yes. You were going to Tempe this week for the game. Please go to Four Peaks. By the way, we always have glasses that I drink water out of.
And the I get you the Buc-ee's one is when I should.
You got the wrong one. You should have got a Four Peaks class. I have a million Four Peaks classes. Go to Four Peaks. I would tell them that we sent you, but that's weird. Don't do that.
they'll say, who?
Who? Yeah. And you want to get the, I think it's called the 8th Street Chicken and Chips. It's their chicken tenders, whatever it's called. It is the best chicken tenders in the world. It is a beer battered chicken tender, and their fries are to die for. They are incredible. Legitimately the best chicken tenders imaginable.
Those tendies are stunningly good.
It is outrageous every time. Yes. And for all the chicken tender haters that presumably you're going to be in the chat, but listening to this wherever you may be in the world, get over it and go try them. They're really good. They're really good. So yeah, you go check out their Four Peaks in Tempe. But also, more importantly, you'll be in Arizona, which is a legal gambling state. Because Alicia, have you signed up for DraftKings yet? I'm sure you haven't because you haven't been to Arizona yet. But when you go to Arizona this week, if you're a new user, you can receive $150 in bonus bets instantly. They're following just three steps. You create an account, number one. Well, first of all, number one, you go to Arizona. Number two, you create an account. Then you're going to wager $5 on any sport. Whether your first wager wins or loses, you'll still receive $150 in bonus bets. All you have to do is use the code Reign of Troy when you sign up. The best part is you use that code Reign of Troy this week when you go to Arizona. And it not only gets you the bonus bet, but it helps you support the podcast. So if you're considering signing up for DraftKings when you go to Arizona this week, followed by you going to Colorado next week, another legal gambling state, you're going to use our code Reign of Troy to maximize your first bets. This offer, of course, is available for new customers who are 21 plus and physically present in legal gambling states. Like Arizona and Colorado.
Exactly. Yes. Now is the time, kids. Now is the time.
Strike while the iron is hot, baby. So please remember to always gamble responsibly and check the episode description for the full terms of the offer. Chicken tendies and over-under picks. That's what's hot in the desert this week. Alicia, we got a bunch of good too, so let's start with the news, shall we?
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, Alicia, I hit the news button here because I usually do. I have a little reflex to always hit the news button after we do the ad and all that kind of stuff. It's really quick today. Mason Cobb is healthy. He's going to play for the Trojans. There you go.
Yeah.
There's the news.
All things considered, on a Wednesday, if there's not that much news, that's generally a good thing. USC is coming off of a bye. Guys have gotten healthy. It looks like they're going to be ready to go, ready to play. So all good news from practice in terms of the health of players that is being shared. So yay, we get to see Mason Cobb. Yay, we get to learn more about the defense. Yay.
There you go. Both number 13s, double 13. More lucky numbers for you, of course, to use on your DraftKings entry this week. There you go. All right, let's get to USC and Arizona State. Locking horns for the final time in the Pac-12 era. Pac-10, Pac-8, well, never as the Pac-8 member. The Arizona schools came over in the late 70s to make the Pac-8 the Pac-10. For the longest time, ASU had a winning record against SC. Because ASU, it's always weird to think, you know, you think about what the landscape was like when you were a kid. So for you and me, I always think of ASU as like a full-blooded, you know, Pac-10 member.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've never not been in the Pac-10.
They've never not been for
me. Pac-10 or yeah. Pac-12 for me.
Yeah, yeah, but almost about a decade before we existed, they were the Utah before Utah existed. They came over as, you know, a dominant force in the WAC, and then jooined the Pac-12 or the Pac-10, sorry, and were not WAC because they had a winning record against the Trojans for a long time. That changed. SC won a million games in a row against the Sun Devils going into the Pete Carroll era, and that sort of held true for a long time. Of late, it's been a little bit topsy-turvy. Trojans have lost in them 3 out of 4 years from 2011 to 2014. Of course, the Tarmac game in 2013. The J.L. Merritt game in 2014. Y'all remember that one. There's the that long, ridiculous N'Keal Harry punt return in 2018. Jeez.
Yeah.
There's the game that I really do not remember in 2021. The 2021 forgettable season, by the way.
Yeah, I bleeped shit from my brain, so yeah. That was on purpose.
And you should have.
Yeah.
SC lost then too, but a lot of wins sprinkled in there. The Trojans lead the series all time. 25-14, if you include, of course, the 2005 game, best game in the series. SC was down 21-3 in Tempe, only to come back to win 38-28 in Sun Devil Stadium, not Mountain America, whatever.
that's probably the game I think of when I think of ASU. I think of the comeback against ASU, and then I think of the Thanksgiving game.
Mm-hmm. Thanksgiving game. I was there. Both? Me and my dad took the mega bus.
Both I might remember because I wasn't really able to watch them very like mm-hmm. the comeback. I was in Sacramento visiting family, and I was alone in like the back room where they had the TV where I was watching the game and sort of like going back and forth to socialize when I was like a kid. I was young.
Yeah.
And then the Thanksgiving one was Thanksgiving, and my aunt and uncle were hosting, and their property has like an upper bit and a lower bit, and the lower bit was where the TV is. So like we got to their house and I'm running straight down to the barn to go watch the game. We couldn't get the TV hooked up. We couldn't get it figured out, and we got it on. And like immediately that's when boom, the score, the, was it kickoff return or it was like an early score or whatever.
It was a kickoff return on that was ASU's first score. Yeah. Me and my dad got tickets through StubHub. And we're sitting in the ASU section by mistake. Horrifying when the game immediately goes wrong from the beginning. Yeah. You're like, oh my God, this is going to be brutal. Also terrible in the, you have one of those moments that you just think about for the rest of your lives.
Mm-hmm.
That is embarrassing to you, but it's probably not a big thing to anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
After that game, the guy next to me was like, good game. And he walked away and I'm like, yeah, you too. And I thought there, I'm like, did he think I was a sarcastic asshole?
He's never thought about that moment ever again in his life. And
I think about it on the regular.
Bringing up on a decade later.
On the regular. Yeah. Anyways. Yeah. I am going to miss SC playing over in Tempe. Of course, I lived in Arizona for a while and would go to games there at Sun Devil Stadium, which I will forever call it, this Mountain America BS. But let's talk about this one. Saturday night, 7:30 p.m. on Big Fox. And, of course, it is another Brando and Tillman game. Buckle up for that one. This is a game which the Vegas line opened up at 14.5. SC now 35.5 point favorites.
Yeah.
I have never seen a line just open up like that, like Grand Canyon sized after being 14.5.
Having looked at the numbers.
How is it not there to begin with?
My thought is like there are a few numbers that I don't think are going to ultimately matter in the end, but like there are a few numbers where it's like, okay, so maybe that's where they were thinking the 14, mm-hmm. the road, the defense, USC's defense and ASU's defense is sort of being factored in all of that. And even taking the most generous view of ASU going into this game, I still think it's madness that they set this line at 14.
Yeah,
like when Colorado is a 21 point underdog.
I almost think it was like a typo. It was weird.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. Trenton Chet says open 14.5 in August. This week, 27.5.
Okay, see, that maybe makes that's more sense.
Site that we use says 14.5, which was just bizarre to me.
That makes a lot more sense if that's sort of where the 14 was coming from. Because based on everything else.
27-35.5.
There's a reason that it moved from 20. Yeah.
Is a big move. Why does it move? Well, let's talk about ASU. The Devils, 1-2 on the season. They beat Southern Utah, but then they lose to Oklahoma State. I think it was at 27-15 or something like that. Oklahoma State isn't great, but In year one under Kenny Dillingham, I don't think there's any basic shame in that. But the shame comes in week three. Get absolutely blown to smithereens by Fresno State. We know Fresno State is well coached, but 29-0?
Yeah.
Fresno State forced 8 turnovers for ASU in that game. 8 turnovers matches the number of turnovers that SC has had in 17 games under Lincoln Riley. Like, it's wild. But also there's the quarterback issues.
The wild thing, though, and you're going to talk about the quarterback thing, is that, like, they had 8 turnovers and they didn't have 3 quarterbacks in that game because they were benching quarterbacks. Like, they had 3 quarterbacks in that game because the dudes who were committing all the turnovers got hurt and they had to go to the next guy. Like,
yeah, just one by one by one by one. Freshman Jaden Rashada pretty much won the quarterback job. He gets hurt, does not start against Fresno State. He's going to be out a little bit. So Trenton Bourget goes in there. He gets the start against Fresno State. He completes 6 of 8 passes, throws a pick, leaves due to a leg injury. He's considered doubtful against SC. Drew Pine, the Notre Dame transfer who missed a lot of training camp, which is why he didn't really compete for the job like people thought he was going to after he transferred over from Notre Dame. He is the backup against Fresno State, QB3, but really the backup in that game because they're already down a quarterback. He leaves due to an undisclosed injury. Again, not the hamstring that he got hurt with in fall camp. He throws a couple of picks in that game. Jacob Conover, the fourth stringer, comes in and finishes the game. All 3 quarterbacks against Fresno State combined to go 17 of 37 for a .188 with 5 interceptions.
And 2 fumbles.
And 2 fumbles. And all 3 of those quarterbacks threw at least one interception in the game. This is a historically bad offense. Having a historically bad game against Fresno State, but through 3 games, 129th in scoring offense. They're averaging 13 points a game. 124th in total offense. They're under the 300 yard mark. They're 130th in turnover margin at -3 per game. -3 per game.
That is very heavily weighted towards an 8 turnover game.
Well, the funny part is they are -9 in the turnover margin this year.
They had one in the 2 games prior.
Yes, it was -1 the first 2 games.
Yeah.
-8 in game 3. So that kind of changes things.
So the thing, though, is it's hard. With this offense, it's a little bit hard to get a read on what they actually are, could be.
Yeah.
Because they were starting the true freshman quarterback, Jaden Rashada, in the first 2 weeks. He did not do very well, but he was a true freshman starting for a team that is very unsettled right now. So, like, that's not a surprise. But Oklahoma State, traditionally a good defense. Oklahoma State tends to have a very good defense. Fresno State tends to be a very good team. The one that really stands out to me is that first game against Southern Utah, barely beating them by 3 points. Like, Southern Utah went on to lose 41-16 to BYU and then lose 23-21 to UC Davis.
Yeah.
So, like, even if you wanted to give Arizona State credit for the schedule, like, it's certainly not an easy schedule under difficult circumstances for Kenny Dillingham in his first year. Even if he wanted to sort of throw them that bone, their easy game was a dogfight. It was not something that's super encouraging in terms of whether or not this ASU team is going to do anything interesting this year.
Yeah, exactly. I think that, you know, the game they've been the most impressive is, I guess, the loss to Oklahoma State.
Yeah, and we found, as Kenny in the chat said, like, and then we found out that Oklahoma State, Houston, they have a problem, yes. Or Stillwater, you've got a problem because they got boat raced by South Alabama in week 3. So again, not looking good for the Sun Devils in terms of evaluating their schedule so far.
Yeah, the offense really the issue for the Sun Devils, and it came down to it that Chris Cartman of Sun Devil Source put on Twitter this week, breaking: Kenny Dillingham is calling offensive plays at practice for the first time today instead of Bo Baldwin, which is interesting because Kenny Dillingham, in his first year as a head coach, I don't think there's anyone that is on a cooler seat in the country than Kenny Dillingham, even after losing 29-0 to Fresno State. This is a bowl band ASU team. They've added an extra year on his contract because of the bowl ban. He is replacing an absolute dumpster fire that was left by Herm Edwards. I don't think there's big expectations in year one for him. Mind you, ASU always finds this way to just like constantly be at least 7-5. Even when you think they're going to be bad, they're still 7-5. I don't think that's going to happen this year. This does not look like a decent ASU team, but it's still interesting to sort of take the reins of the play calling after three games. Like usually that feels like a last ditch effort move. That feels like a rash decision. Shouldn't you have been calling the plays in the first place then, I guess?
That's where I'm at. Like, there is this tendency for first-time head coaches to try to focus on being a head coach. And I certainly think there's merit in the idea that you need to focus on being a head coach and learning how to do that. But when you're Kenny Dillingham, like, your play calling is what got you hired as the head coach.
Right.
It's weird to me that so many coaches take that aspect of their ability and just set it to the side as like a break in case of emergency. Well, like, don't get in your emergency in the first place. I think that Lincoln Riley sort of has it right, where he is the play caller. He will always be the play caller. Like, that's
right.
That's one of his great strengths. So why wouldn't he put his best foot forward? So this just feels like, Why weren't you the play caller in the first place?
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting situation to see if that changes things. I mean, you look at ASU, they can only get better on offense. A lot of that's going to come with repetition at quarterback. If they continue to get to go through all these guys with injuries, how do you get into sort of any rhythm? At the same point, if they're able to just have Drew Pine, who started at Notre Dame last year, he didn't look terrible. He threw for 318 yards and 3 TDs against the Trojans last November. A lot of that, of course, to Michael Mayer, but like, he was able to move the ball. He didn't look like the worst quarterback in the world, which all of them collectively sort of looked like that against Fresno State. So if he can be healthy and all that stuff, maybe they can be a little bit better. I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens on Saturday against the Trojans, because you look at the numbers that we have on the screen here on YouTube. Points per drive, USC on defense, 13th in the country at 1.03. Going into it, even with SC having a schedule that is, you know, softer than ultra soft, to begin the season, I don't think you would have imagined that SC would be 13th in the country in points per drive through the first three games, but yet they are. And ASU is 129th. So if SC could, you know, shut down Nevada and Stanford to the extent that they did the last 2 weeks, which is, mind you, what SC should be doing when they have a talent gap like they do over those teams, then shouldn't they do that sort of same thing on Saturday night against ASU?
I mean, that's the big question. There was a point last week during the bye week that I was like, man, it sucks that USC is playing ASU, especially this ASU, where everything that could go wrong for ASU in terms of injuries, their offensive line is ravaged by injuries, everything's going wrong for them. That it was like, it's unfortunate that USC is going to be playing them this week, because we won't learn that much about USC. But the more I thought about it, the more I think there is something to learn about the USC's defense against this ASU offense. specifically because it does look like they're going to play Drew Pine. And yes, Drew Pine doesn't have the advantage that that he had last year when he was playing behind Notre Dame's offensive line with a talent like Michael Mayer to throw to.
Mm-hmm.
But we did see him against a USC defense where it did feel like they were making him look better than he is. And that's going to be something that I have circled as something I'm looking out for in terms of the eye test for USC in this game. The concept that if Drew Pine looks good again in this game, then like that's a USC defense problem, because
sure,
we have seen what Oklahoma State, what Fresno State did. He had four turnovers in that game. He couldn't complete a pass in that game. Like, mm-hmm, the quarterback should not beat you in this game. And if they do, then you haven't progressed the way that we need you to progress. So this game is going to tell us something, potentially. Again, it's as we've said now for 4 or 5 weeks, that the potential to be told something is more weighted towards the bad side of things than the good side of things. Because if USC, pitches a shutout here, that'll almost like it'll be very impressive if USC pitches a shutout. Don't get me wrong, but like that's something that Fresno State did. So you're sort of just going for the course.
Yeah, let's talk about the running game. ASU has probably the best name running back duo in the history of college football. Cam Scatterboo, their leading rusher, 36 carries, 148 yards, 2 touchdowns on the season, followed by my favorite name I've ever seen, DeCarlos Brooks. My favorite movie name of all time, Major League 3, Back to the Minors. Underrated movie. People hate on it. Get over it. It's a great movie. Carlos Liston is the main bad guy. I've always thought Carlos Liston, the coolest name of all time. DeCarlos Brooks, though? That's Carlos Liston level. That's good. I love that.
It's a good name.
Yeah. 21 carries, 90 yards for DeCarlos Brooks. SC has been susceptible against the run. We've seen that in the first 2 weeks. Stanford especially. Part of that was because Lamson was so good, the Stanford backup quarterback on his feet. Drew Pine, not necessarily a runner. So what do you think about SC against the run this week?
Well, it's a good way to test whether or not this run defense can mind their P's and Q's and mm-hmm. keep it's all for USC's defense. It's all about keeping things in front of them. When we've seen them break down, it's because somebody missed a bad tackle or somebody wasn't in their run fit. If we see USC's defense, they don't have to out physical ASU. They don't have to deal with monstrous athletic talents that are just going to, take advantage of them on an individual level. For me, this matchup is really just about, can USC's defense take care of business the way that they should be taking care of business in terms of doing your assignment? Don't miss that tackle. And ASU in their game notes is touting that they have forced more missed tackles than I forget what it is. They're up there in terms of like forcing missed tackles in college football this year. So that's the big thing is
They've forced 42 missed tackles on offense, the 7th best in FBS.
Yeah, there you go. So it's really about USC making sure that they are being fundamentally sound in this game, and mm-hmm. the defense will be fine if that's the case.
They did play in the middle of a monsoon in their first game.
That'll factor
in. I do wonder how much that factors into those missed tackles, but... Yeah.
And I wonder, it's a shame we don't have like by game numbers, because one of the things that we mentioned, remember, from Oklahoma State with Mason Cobb coming over was that he had a lot of missed tackles. So like maybe it's an Oklahoma State thing as well.
Yeah, I don't know. Let's turn the page and talk about the USC offense going up against the ASU defense. The Sun Devils, they run a standard defense that you see in college football these years. A 4-2-5, your standard nickel defense. BJ Green, I think, is the guy to watch on defense for ASU. 2 sacks, 4 tackles for loss, 5 quarterback hurries through 3 games so far. Him and Prince Dorba, 2.5 sacks, 2.5 tackles for loss there. Might be cause for concern for what USC has to get ready for on the offensive line. We know the Trojans have not been necessarily great on the offensive line, but they have the all-time greatest deeker of pass rushers in Caleb Williams. So that probably helps. And this was the USC offense that absolutely took it to Stanford a couple of weeks ago, 49 points straight out of the gate with Caleb Williams at quarterback. He did not play a down in the second half. So he is fresh off not only a bye week, but having only played half a game against Stanford. We know that he played, what is it, 2.5 quarters against Nevada before that? Caleb Williams has not played that much. What do you expect offensively for the Trojans going into Mountain America, whatever it is?
Yeah, I think that USC's offense is going to be very, very difficult for anybody to stop.
Mm-hmm.
But the ASU defense this year, they haven't been a disaster. Now, we know that Oklahoma State's offense maybe doesn't really have a lot going for them either. So giving up 27 points there, maybe not the greatest thing in the world. But in a game where you're getting toasted, in a game where you are, your offense is actively hurting your defense with 8 turnovers, I'm kind of impressed that they only gave up 29 points to Fresno State. Only 15 points off of turnovers. Like, that's an achievement for a defense. That is an uphill battle that the defense is climbing, and for them to stay in it and make sure that this didn't turn into a 40 point embarrassment. I got to give them some credit, and the numbers back that up. The numbers on defense, the SP Plus ranking is 87th. That's heavily weighted towards last year. The points per game certainly isn't good, but the other numbers, they're not terrible for ASU's defense. Now, not terrible isn't good enough to stop USC's offense. Caleb Williams is a special talent. USC has just too many guys across the board. But one thing that Fresno State has done well is create havoc plays. They had 6 sacks against Fresno State. They had 8 tackles for loss. So they do have some dudes who can get in there. You know, Dorba and Torrance can get after you and get behind the line of scrimmage and cause disruption. So once again, it'll really just be about USC being fundamentally sound, Caleb Williams being Caleb Williams, and avoiding maybe a little bit of that Oregon State off day that he had last year. Like, that really, when I look at this matchup, like, that's the only thing, and to me it's a very slim chance, but we did see Caleb have a weird off day on the road against Oregon State last year. So mm-hmm.
Pac-12 road opener.
Yeah, Pac-12 road opener.
Wait, no, it wasn't. Never mind.
Was Oregon State the second? Yeah.
That part.
But either way, like, when you go on the road, especially the road for the first time in a season, you know, you're upsetting your sort of standard mode of operating. It's the first time you're getting on a plane and going somewhere for the year and all of that. So things can get a little bit weird. And the important thing for USC is just to stay settled down and to do what we know they can do. I don't think there's a huge threat here from this ASU defense, unless USC hands them things by playing sloppy, by dropping passes, or by having the offensive line not be, not keep things in front of them, by having Caleb maybe have his sort of off day. So preventing mistakes from the USC perspective is really the important thing here, because if USC isn't out here putting up a bunch of turnovers, like, they're going to score on this defense. That much is pretty clear.
Yeah. I think this ASU defense is terrible by any means, at least not compared to compared to the offense, which is just really, really bad.
Right. But that comparison is.
But that comparison doesn't do a lot of favors to anybody. So, I think that this looks to be another week in which SC should be able to move the ball on offense, but so does every week. That's what this offense.
I'm waiting for the week when that won't be said. It kind of makes.
I don't know that there will be a week.
Yeah, it makes previewing USC's matchups, offense versus the opposing defense, a little bit just repetitive. But when it comes down to it, like who is gonna stop Caleb Williams? I don't think this ASU defense is gonna stop Caleb Williams. It goes back to the only person who's gonna stop Caleb Williams is Caleb Williams. So
right,
you know.
Yeah, Sean in the chat says Caleb Williams is another name for cheat mode.
I mean, that's what it feels like.
Yes. Basically, yeah. You know, Bill Connolly's numbers have SC, doing good things, of course. But, like, he made the comment the other day that SC's offense, the most reliable thing in college football. It is. It just is. This offense, with this scheme, with this system, with Caleb Williams leading it and with so much control that he has, it's the most reliable thing. And it makes our game previews slightly boring because there's only so many ways you can say that, SC looks like if everything goes right, they're going to score 60 points this week.
Yeah.
But if everything goes right, they're going to score 60 points this week. There you go. There's a preview of the offense.
If everything goes half right, they're scoring 50 points. So it's
It's how it is until it isn't. Until it isn't, that's going to be the case for these Trojans. They look absolutely unstoppable on offense. But let's get to some over under, shall we?
So you're going over.
I'm feeling bold. Give me that over.
I'll go under. I got to take an under here. I got three unders to take.
I'm going
to
do an under here.
All right. So this is over under. Not the DraftKings over under, but you can do that by using the code Reign of Troy when you're in Arizona this week and when you're in Colorado next week. So remember that. But this is our over under. Our Reign of Troy over under. A game in which I am leading the season with a record of 10-8. You are 9-9. A game behind in the both the win and the loss column. You looking to improve that. What is your first over-under of the week? What do you got?
I'm going over-under 2.5 ASU giveaways. So turnovers committed by ASU, turnovers forced by USC. 2.5. USC had three turnovers against Stanford. We saw what that pass rush, what Bear Alexander and the defensive front was able to do to disrupt Stanford's offense and force those turnovers. And obviously ASU had the eight turnovers against Fresno State. That was two turnovers, two interceptions, two fumbles from Drew Pine, the quarterback that we expect to play to start for ASU against USC. I think this is interesting, especially because, and it's not, this is not a one-to-one comparison by any means, not even a comparison, but it's worth noting that Fresno State's defense in SP Plus ranks 51st and USC's in SP Plus ranks 47th. So they are in the same class of defense coming into the season.
Sure.
Fresno State and USC. So that's not to say that, like, I expect USC's defense to get as many turnovers as Fresno State's did. But I think that when we're looking at this game, we have to look at what Fresno State's defense was able to do in terms of being disruptive to ASU in terms of really getting under their skin as something that USC has to look to do as well. So thought I'd take it from a turnover perspective instead of just doing like the will USC get a shutout.
So 2.5, right? 2.5 ASU
2.5
giveaways. I'm going to maybe this is a little pessimistic on the SC side. Sure, I don't know. I'm taking the under here, and the reason for that is ASU's turnover issues so held to that Fresno State game that it's hard to say that they have a turnover problem or did they have a bad turnover game? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's hard to say. Like when you turn over the ball 8 times, that tells you have more than just a one game problem, more than likely. But they haven't done it in other games like that. So, I don't know. I think SC can still force a couple turnovers in this game and it still be under that 2.5 line. So I'm going to take the under. The 2.5 just a little too high. If it was 1.5, I'd take the over probably.
So I flirted with setting this line at 3.5 and just felt like that's way too
high. That would have been too easy of an under, I think.
Yeah. You're playing the odds here, which is something that I always do. So I'm kind of glad that I get the over on this because I think that this could be a huge game for USC havoc wise. Mm-hmm. So we will see.
Absolutely. Could be. I mean, the Trojans they're averaging 9 tackles for loss per game. They continue that kind of havoc rate and force negative plays. They're going to put ASU in position to have to gamble, have to throw the ball downfield, have to do those kind of things, which leads to turnovers.
But USC could have 0 turnovers in this game and still have a really, really good defensive performance. In fact, without any turnovers in this game, with the right score line, I'd feel very, very good about a defensive performance in this game.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Let's go to my first over under of the game of the week. Hear me out on this. Over under 1.5 full quarters until ASU scores. I need to explain how this works.
Yeah, so ASU
has not scored in 6 full quarters. They obviously did not score against Fresno State, 4 quarters there. And they didn't score in the second half against Oklahoma State. So 6 full quarters they have not scored. So how many full quarters until they score against SC? I've put the line at 1.5, which essentially means if you say it's under, then that means 0, which means they're going to score in the first half, first quarter, or 1, they're going to score in the second quarter because they will have completed 1 more full empty quarter. So will they score in the first half is the under, essentially.
I love this over under. Like, I love this concept. I love the ASU gave us the chance.
I thought about doing this. Minutes, by the way, but
that would get so
that would be weird.
1 quarter and 8 minutes.
Yeah. Just like 99 minutes or something that they've been scoreless. Yeah.
Yeah. I am taking the under, which means that they're scoring, and I think ASU will score in the first half. That's me taking the under, correct?
Yes.
Yes. I'm taking the under. I have it in my head that ASU is scoring on their first drive because that's the stupidest outcome. And
it would be funny.
Outcome is usually what happens.
It would be funny. Yeah. They scored on like the second play or something.
Yeah.
That is comic genius.
Yes. The script writers know how this is supposed to go.
Right.
So I am definitely taking the under, but I love the concept. And certainly when I'm taking an under that I could lose, I will be happy to lose this one, to be quite honest.
Yeah. I mean, if SC goes out on the road and gets the shutout,
I will feel so good.
Would not feel good if you're an ASU fan, for sure, back-to-back weeks. Let's get to your next over-under. What's that one going to be?
All right, I am going with 4.71. That's USC yards per carry rushing. So USC's season low so far in the first 3 games is 4.71. That was against San Jose State. Mm-hmm. They are averaging 6.77 yards per carry this season. The one really good thing that ASU has consistently done in every single game is not give up the run. Their season high for rush yards per carry was against Oklahoma State at 3.65. Their defense is averaging 2.8 yards per carry allowed. That's very good. Like, yeah. I think they're doing a very, very good job against the run. And USC, the only area of USC's offense that isn't otherworldly is the rushing attack. And I don't think that's because the rushing attack is bad necessarily. I just don't think USC is like leaning. The rushing attack is definitely second fiddle to the passing attack.
I think it's because the passing game is so good.
I mean, yeah. Right? How are you supposed to run the ball when every time you pass the ball, you're getting also, 30 yards and a touchdown?
How are you supposed to run the ball as good as the passing game is?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. I'm not saying that's a vulnerability for USC on the ground, but it's right. certainly not an area where USC is statistically blowing up the stat sheet. So
yeah,
will USC have, essentially what this is asking is, will USC have a season low in terms of yards per carry going against a defense that has held the first three teams that they faced to essentially season lows?
Yeah. The crazy part about this is where you put the line, SC could have a season low that is almost 2 yards better than ASU's season average to date and still get the under, which is nuts.
Yeah.
But I'm going to take the over. SC, 4.71 in the season opener against San Jose State, but they ran the ball so good the last 2 weeks. Marshawn Lynch, Marshawn Lloyd. Marshawn Lynch just rolls off the tongue. It's annoying. Marshawn Lloyd is, he just looks so good. Austin Jones, just quietly reliable. And so I don't see any reason not to say that the Trojans have a yards per carry average that's higher than 4.71. I think the argument for taking the under would be if SC blows the game up early and then calls off the dogs in the second half and ends up running the ball a lot in the second half and maybe get like Quentin Joyner out there and like things kind of, you know, slowly slow down that way or something like that. But I expect SC's offense to just be running all over ASU in more ways than one. So give me the over on this one.
Okay.
All right. Let's go to my next over under, which is over under 35% ASU available yards gained. There's a thing here. So I want to explain this. Available yards, if you start at the 25-yard line, you have 75 yards to gain. You score a touchdown, you've gained 100% of your available yards. If you gain 25 yards in punts, then you've gained 33%. You've gained 25 of those 75 yards, 33% of your available yards. That's how it works. ASU's offense this year is 126th in the country in available yards. They are gaining 26.7% of their available yards. But the stat, the site that we go to for this, which is bcftoys.com, highly recommended, by the way, their available yards are in non-garbage drives. So they parse out the garbage time drives. I am not doing that for this over under. So I bumped it up to 35% because I'm not going to take garbage time out of here because the method for what garbage time is so convoluted. It's like, is it 16 points and the number of minutes and the, it's, I'm not that much of a math person. SC's defense, by the way, 16th in the country in defensive available yards. They're holding teams to 32.5% available yards on non-garbage drives. So we're going to say 35% on all drives, garbage included. 35 over under 35% available yards, garbage included for ASU.
Yeah, this one's hard to pick because I don't.
I wish I would have like ran the numbers on what the Stanford game was.
Yeah.
Stat Broadcast doesn't have it, unfortunately.
No. My philosophy here is to take the over because it's USC's defense. And right now in over under, I've sort of decided I'm just going to bet against USC's defense. And that way, if they're bad, then I win over under. And if they're good, then I win my sanity. So I'm going over on this. I don't have a good sense of of how this will play out, especially knowing, like, if ASU is turning the ball over, like, that mm-hmm. is devastating. But if they're not turning the ball over, is USC getting three and outs? We've seen USC's defense give up long drives from teams that maybe they shouldn't have allowed to keep extending the drive. So I don't know. But I'm going over.
Before you give an answer, you're just taking the over, though?
I'm taking the over.
Okay. So you're taking the over. Which will lock me into the under. Just to give you some context, I'm looking at the Stanford drive chart. Stanford averaged starting on their own 24. So then we can assume that they had 76 yards to gain on every drive, right?
Mm-hmm.
They averaged 25 yards gained per drive. So that's 25 divided by 76. 32.8. I can probably go in there and add every specific thing to get the exact number, but like just spitballing 32.8, it seems like the 35% is a decent way to place the put the line, I think. But yeah. You're going over. I think going over is more than fair, especially when you take out garbage time. One long drive on the last drive of the game could absolutely change those things. So. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's probably a good call there. I'll get locked into the under, of course. Let's go to your last over-under. What do you got?
I'm going with 6.5, and that is plays of 20-plus yards for the USC offense. Now, ASU, again, the things that the ASU defense is doing very well is they are not giving up explosive plays this year. They rank 9th nationally with only 6 plays of 20 or more yards allowed in their opening 3 games. USC is on the other side of the spectrum on offense, or I guess the same side of the spectrum on offense, on the other side of the coin. USC ranks 4th nationally with 26 plays of 20 plus yards in the first 3 games. That is an average of 8.6 plays of 20 plus yards per game.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, USC averaged 6.5 long plays per game. So suffice to say, USC's offense is very explosive and has been explosive this year, without a doubt. But ASU has done a good job of not giving up those kinds of plays. So will we see USC have more plays of 20 or more yards in this game than ASU has allowed all season combined?
So this is a wild stat because where I'm going to go with this seems insane. For full disclosure, in the Stanford game, the greatest offensive performance you've ever seen in your life in the first half, right? SC had 6. They had two rushes of 20 plus. The 21-yard quarterback keeper touchdown from Caleb Williams, a 25 yard scamper from Marshawn Lloyd, and then passes of 34, 22, 75, and 28 yards. That's only 6. They only had 6 in that game. Compare that to Nevada, where they had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. They had 5 rushes of 20 yards against Nevada. And 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So they had 14 20 plus yard plays against the. Yeah, I'm slamming the over. I'm slamming the over. So my thought was, well, they didn't do it against Stanford. That makes me a little nervous. But I was going to make the claim that, but they also had 2 19 yard passing plays that were basically right there.
USC also had short fields more often against Stanford because of the turnovers.
Yeah. Either way, the numbers against Nevada are insane. the way Stat Broadcast talks about it, it's gains of 15 plus and 10 plus, and they have SC at 17 of those, which is nuts. 345 of SC's passing yards came on gains of 15 plus against Nevada.
That's wild.
God, that is nuts. So yeah, give me the over there. Let's go to my final over under of the week, which is just ASU yards per play, 4.52. I'm putting the line there because that's where the Trojans kept Rice at last year, 4.52 yards per play, which was the lowest of the season defensively for USC in 2022. This ASU offense, I don't think I'm speaking out of turn, might be the worst offense that USC plays all year. Nevada, maybe? Is Nevada worse?
Cal? Is Cal an offense?
I can't imagine Cal would be worse. Either way, can SC improve that yards per average from last year? Can they best what they did last year, 4.52? ASU, of course, averaging 4.57 yards per play, which is just a smidge over this line. They averaged 4.4 against Oklahoma State. That would count as an under. And they got 3.59 yards per play against Fresno State, which is way under. So 4.52 is the line against SC here. Final over-under of the week.
Okay, I've already stated my philosophy that on over-under, I'm just betting against the USC defense because I win either way. But I have another reason for taking the over on this one, and I am taking the over. Number one, this is in ASU. This is in Tempe, so I'm going to give them that sort of little home field advantage that the other teams that USC has played so far haven't had.
Yeah.
Number two, Kenny Dillingham is taking over play calling, and I have more faith in Kenny Dillingham to at least have a plan. I don't know if his players are going to be able to execute his plan, but I sort of trust him to have a plan that's going to maybe be a little bit more, a little bit less disastrous than what we've seen from ASU so far. So
sure.
Taking the over, playing my odds that that ASU will move the ball at least a few times during the game and not get, you know, totally shut out by a USC defense that I'm still,
nice.
I'm still skeptical of the USC defense. I'm not going to buy into the USC defense until I have more reason to do so.
Pessimistic Alicia is out in full force.
It's realism. It's not pessimism. I'm biding my time. I'm waiting. I'm sort of scoping out what's going on with the defense. And we haven't gotten there yet for me to say that I'm not going to bet against them in over under yet.
Yeah. I like this. I like having the under here because I thought about putting this number at like 4 flat.
Well, it's very low though. Like that's very low.
It's low based on what SC has done.
Yeah.
You know, sort of historically under Alex Grinch. Yeah. But ASU has not done great. Absolutely. So all right. That's going to wrap up over under. Let's finish off our USC ASU preview, of course. By doing game predictions. We talk about the Vegas spread. 35.5 is the line for the Trojans. They are favored. What is your prediction Saturday night? Final SC ASU game.
I've got USC winning this one big. I'm going with 56-17. 56 because that is the number that USC likes to score this year. Two of the three games have been 56-point games for USC's offense. So it seems like a good number there. And then I'm going 17 on the other side. I think that USC's defense will mostly have success against this team. I think that we're more likely to see ASU add on a touchdown late, kind of the way that Stanford added on a touchdown late. Maybe ASU scores a touchdown on their first drive and their last drive of the game. And then somewhere in the middle, they kick a field goal and that's how they get to 17.
Yeah. They knock like a 52 yarder at the half or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. here's my prediction. I buried the lead here. This is the Pac-12 road opener. We know what happens in Pac-12 road openers, folks. We know what happens. Over the years, I don't have to go down the list. 2008 at Oregon State, loss. 2009 at Washington, loss. 2011 at ASU, loss. Like the list, Stanford 2012, loss. 2013 ASU, loss. I don't have to keep going down the list, folks. And you look at, you talk about the 56 points that SC scored in week one and three. You miss the 66 points that SC scored against Nevada. If you take the second digit of SC score line in week one, two, and three, it is 666. The sign of the devil, and they're going to play the Devils on Saturday night. That can only mean one thing. I was not going to do what Richard said I'm going to do in the chat, but screw it. I'm going to. SC 52, ASU nothing. There we go.
Oh, by all
Richard
means.
Baited me into the shutout. He says, Michael's about to predict a shutout. Yeah, I'm going for it. 52 to nothing. Let's go. I was going to go 52-13, but that's not official. Not canon. Not canon. 52-13, not canon. 52 nothing, canon. There we go.
I think the likelihood of a shutout is always low, no matter who's playing, no matter what the discrepancy between the team is. But if ever there was an opportunity for USC to get a shutout, if ever there was an opportunity, it's this week. If, like, if ever Alex Grinch has the opportunity to get a shutout at USC, it is this week.
It's this week, yeah.
Because of the injury issues at ASU, because of the uncertainty around their quarterback, because of the sort of reeling nature of the program, like, if ever there was a chance. As Richard said, USC hasn't shut out anyone since 2011.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to get shutouts. We know this.
Who did they shut out in 2011?
Tille.
Yeah.
It took me a second.
It took you a bit. It took me a bit. I was like, wait, who did they shut out in 2011?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're predicting a better win than that, so let's go.
The shutout wins that I always think of are all the 2008 ones. 69-0 against Washington, 56-0 against 69-0 against Washington State, 56-0 against Washington. I think there was another one. It was a 45-0 against Stanford or something like that. No, not Stanford. 45-0. So, there was another one in there. Yeah. So, Mark in the chat says ASU is so bad it should be 77-3.
I'm now regretting not going 66-6 just to have the Sun Devil
a true sign of the devil. It is at night, so I don't know if the Sun Devil will be there.
Yeah, the sun won't be out for the Devils.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's go into the old mailbag show.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You've got mail.
Tim in LA says, ESPN says USC is favored by 34.5. So we should obviously win, says Tim. But considering there are still some questions about this year's team, What should they do on Saturday for it to be considered a success? Does SC need to cover? Hold ASU to a certain number of points? Score a certain number of points? What's the benchmark for a success for USC on Saturday night against ASU?
Oh, I think covering that 30-point spread is a minimum bench. If we're holding USC to the standard that we sort of are this year in terms of expecting them to be great, I think you have to win this game by 30 points at least. To me, this is very much not acceptable to be a winning by 30, like it being 70 to 40, you know, 60 to 30 or something like that. Like that also isn't necessarily a success because we know USC's offense is incredible. I will be impressed if USC is able to put up closer to 60 points against an ASU defense that has shown that they are effective this season. So I think I want to see USC up above 40 points at least.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm really looking for is the defense to take advantage of an offense in crisis and hold them to points in the teens. I think in the modern game, points in the teens is sort of where you need to be every week that you're playing a sort of a lesser opponent. I don't think you need to hold them under 10 points. Like that's not the game that we're playing nowadays, but like,
yeah,
if you can stay within, you know, 10 to 17, I'll be happy.
It is remarkable to me how much better the scoreline looks when it's like if, for instance, if you beat somebody 45-13, versus 55-20,
mm-hmm,
the 45-13 bigger margin, smaller margin, it looks just so much better.
Mm-hmm.
Having the one there, just like having, you know, single digits looks so much better. But holding teams in the teens, how did you put it?
Hold teams in the teens.
Yeah, I need to cut that with like, you know, I talked about the romance music when you talk about Marshawn Lloyd, but yeah, like holding teens in the teens, like that kind of works there.
Yeah, hold teens in the teens.
You hold teens in the teens. Hold teams
in the teens.
And if you're able to do that, that is a good looking scoreline for USC's defense. Yeah, absolutely. I think that's right. I think if you hold them to 17 points or less and you score 50 plus, you've done your job.
Absolutely.
I think the simplest way to do it is, I think, yeah, cover. If you cover the spread, yeah, absolutely. Realistically, you cover the spread. I think SC's fine, but
cover the spread at halftime, and I do not care what the second half.
Oh boy.
Well, I don't know. I've been.
No, I agree with it. We were talking at lunch. We met up with our friend Kenny at lunch, and you're talking about, well, what if they score, you know, 24 points? And I'm like, but how do they do that?
Well,
yeah. If SC is up 52-7 at halftime, but yet they win 59-24, I do not care.
Yeah.
Do not care, because 52-7 at halftime means that they've called off the dogs completely in the second half. So that's a completely different thing there. Let's go to a question from Kenny. Is the ASU guy who squirted his water bottle at Caleb Williams still at ASU? So that guy is Nesta Jade Silvera. And according to Wikipedia, he plays for the Raiders.
He went to the NFL.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He's with the Raiders. He was a 7th round pick. He's on the active roster. There you go.
Good for him.
So we got a question from Jessica very early in the chat. We didn't answer, but I saw that LA Fred answered for us. Very important question. What's your dog's name sitting behind Alicia? That's Jesse, even though, where did Jesse go?
Jesse's down on the floor next to me.
I was going to say, I don't even see her anymore.
Yeah.
That's Jesse, the official rot dog, I guess you could say. Rot dog? It's close to hot dog.
Rot dog. Yeah, that is rot close dog. To hot dog.
The rot dog. Yeah. Anyways, we're going to cut this thing there. Thanks for joining us. As always, USC and Arizona State lock and horns Saturday night. We'll be back with the CarCast right after the game, immediately after the game. Probably realistically about 10 minutes after the end of the game, USC and Arizona State on Saturday night. We'll have a CarCast with all of our reactions to what goes down in the game on Saturday night. Plus, probably all of our reactions to everything else that happens on Saturday, because this Saturday is going to be insane.
Epic.
This is, you know, I get people don't like 7:30 kickoffs. Fine. Whatever. Okay. There's no better week to have a 7:30 kickoff. And, well, of course, we think that you should be going to Arizona so that way you can use the promo code Draft Reign of Troy at DraftKings when you're in the state of Arizona this week. And, of course, next week at Colorado, DraftKings Reign of Troy is the code. Well, you should be doing that. If you stay at home, oh, my God, it's perfect. 12:30, you have Oregon-UCLA. You have, sorry, Oregon-Colorado. You have Utah-UCLA. Alabama and Ole Miss. 4:30, you got Ohio State Notre Dame, which is going to tell us a lot about both of those teams.
Wake up at 9 a.m. and flip back and forth between Florida State Clemson and Oklahoma Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Like, it's a full day of games that have the potential to be bangers.
Yeah. The only downside, as Glenn in the chat says, football and the Japanese Grand Prix. Yes, but the problem is the Japanese Grand Prix begins at 10 p.m. Pacific time on Saturday. Basically, that's the middle of the fourth quarter.
Yeah, we'll have the race up while we're CarCasting.
Yeah, maybe that's what we'll have to do. Kenny says if Penn State loses to Iowa, Iowa could go undefeated. Yeah, and then you're going to have to start talking to your kids about an undefeated Iowa.
So. I'm really excited to see Penn State's offense go against that Iowa defense because, you know, Drew Allaire and that crew gets talked about as potentially being able to contend in the Big Ten. And this is a real big test for them.
Yeah. Mark says your screen on Alicia's angle looks like a giant Switch.
Nintendo Switch?
Oh, that makes more sense. I was thinking like a light Switch.
Maybe.
Yeah. What we need to do is like actually put like a Rot logo on there.
We should put a Rot logo on the screen. Yeah. Mark, hope you're doing okay.
Yeah.
Mark's in the hospital,
and joining it. That's dedication, by the way.
Our thoughts are with you, man. Like that sucks being in the hospital, but yeah. I'm glad that you're well enough that you can tune in and listen and be in the chat. So, yeah,
absolutely. We wish you the best. I'm both in awe and it's funny to me that in awe that you're joining us.
Yeah.
While you're in the hospital, it's dedication as a rot bot. It's funny because I feel like you got more important things than us.
Hey,
we're glad to help the time go.
Some of my favorite the reviews that often mean the most to me are the ones that we've gotten from people who are like, yeah. I was dealing with this thing and listening to you guys really helped take my mind off of it. And like, mm-hmm. that's so we're absolutely here for you in that front. And we will continue to be hopefully a welcome distraction from whatever else is going on. And I mean, life can be difficult at times, so. We're happy to be that distraction.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. We will be back Saturday night after the game for the CarCast. If you are a member of the Rot Squad, where you get all of our bonus content on YouTube, and you can join our Discord and all that stuff for $4.99 a month. If you are a member there, you're going to see us on Thursday nights because Rot After Dark is when we stream back here on YouTube. So
it's a double eviction night on Big Brother and to the Rotbots will be doing Rot After Dark.
EAFC literally drops at 9 p.m. I'm sacrificing a lot, okay?
Yes.
I could be packing in Mbappes and stuff. And my dedication is instead to the stream and to the Rotbots. Yeah. So yeah. All right, guys. We'll see you next time. We gotta go. We got what is it? What was that accent? I just went into it.
I do not know.
We gotta go celebrate Alicia's birthday. So we will see you guys later. Richard says, what time for Out After Dark? 9 p.m. Pacific time is the time. So we'll see you guys until then. See ya. See ya.
See ya.
See ya.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.